but with just a little persuasion, we're in. A few moments later, they were trudging along corridors that reeked of damp and decay. So strong was the smell that it was hard to breathe normally. "People actually do this for fun," Maria exclaimed. "What's the matter with them?" Robbie laughed. Stella thought it was the best thrill ever, discovering somewhere that others hadn't seen for years, finding the evidence of people's lives from so long ago. "I'd rather be yomping up a Welsh mountain in crisp fresh air any day. This place stinks like a midden. Not good, is it? But it'll be better in the auditorium. These service corridors are pretty airless." Lit up in his torch beam, Robbie saw a set of double doors. "The footprints in the dust go this way." He pulled the doors open, and they found themselves in the main seating area. "Oh my," he whispered. Some light filtered in from a strip of narrow windows, high up at ceiling level. Most of the glass had gone, letting a watery light filter through. Robbie noticed the huge Art Deco-style chandeliers, in place, albeit thick with grime and cobwebs. The tiers of seating were still there in their rows, now littered with plaster that had fallen from the damp ceiling, and the rotting red velour was covered with a fine coating of mildew. Parts of the walls were still ornately plastered and decorated with angular geometric designs, though some of it had peeled away to reveal the brickwork beneath. The place felt strange, sad, as if it was waiting. All at once he understood what Stella had been trying to explain to him. There was a whole unknown world to be found in these forbidden places. He stared around him in wonder, his mind expanding to encompass a different experience of place. Now he understood what his dear friend was on about. The beauty in this silent, brooding graveyard of a pleasure house was like an awakening. From her silence, he first imagined that Marie was feeling it too, until she said, "Bloody hell, Robbie. Why hasn't someone either pulled this dump down or spent some money and rebuilt it? What a waste." He suppressed a sigh, the moment fading. Okay, she had a point. It was a shame that someone hadn't made use of such a striking piece of architecture before it reached this state. Well, Lisa said that Anthony Hood was last seen in the projection room, so I guess that's where we should start. Let's hope the stairs are safe. They were glad of their flashlights. Luckily, the staircase was still solid. He pushed the door open and they peered in, their torch beams showing a small dark room that still housed all the fittings, down to shelves of big rusty spools of film labelled Pathé News. The projector itself had long gone. There was one single aperture, where the lens would have pointed through, and the screen, now in tatters, was just visible at the front of the auditorium. Neither of them went in. Both had a shrewd idea that this could turn out to be a crime scene. Robbie looked at the floor. "This area is heavily trodden, isn't it? More than I would have expected from seasoned explorers. They are very careful and tread lightly." Marie shone the beam of her torch across the floor. "There seem to be at least two sets of footprints, though I suppose a couple of other urbexers could have been in here as well."
"I'd say it looks more like a scuffle," said Robbie.
"I think you're right." Marie continued to let her torch beam sweep backwards and forwards across the floor. Then she stopped. "What's that?" Robbie looked. Something glinted. "Broken glass." "Freshly broken glass," Marie said.
"It was the smallest fragment, perhaps half an inch long and triangular in shape. But she was right.
It seemed to be free of dust or dirt." "A lens from someone's glasses, or maybe from a small torch," suggested Marie.
"Yeah, it's convex like one of them. I think you're right."
Robbie exhaled.
"Now what do we do?" "Is it enough to warrant the cost of a forensic sweep?"
Marie gave a little grunt. "I'd say definitely not."
"Well, I suggest we pick it up and take it with us, and I'll have a quiet word with Ella. Maybe she can get her boss to take a look at it for us."
"If there's a problem, I'll pay for the test myself," he offered. "But if this case goes further, which I suspect it will, it could be vital evidence."
"Unorthodox, but yes, I agree."
Marie pulled a small file and some nitrile gloves from her jacket pocket.
"Shall I do the honours?"
"Please do. Your feet are a lot smaller than mine." Marie picked her way across to the shard of glass.
"You're right about some kind of scuffle, Rob. When you get closer, you can see that the dust has been rubbed off several of the shelves and the wall, as if..." Something had been dragged along. With two fingers, she picked up the glass and dropped it into the evidence container, which she pushed back into her pocket. She looked around.
Something happened here, all right, Rob. I'd stake my reputation on it.
Odd that there's no drag marks out here in the corridor, though. If someone had been dragged away, I'd have expected to see the lines their heels made.
There's a lot we don't know right now, said Marie thoughtfully. The other thing is the absence of any noise. If Anthony did put up a fight, why didn't the others hear something? I'd have thought it would have echoed all around the auditorium.
Lisa said he was a big, fit guy, Robbie reflected. It's a puzzle, all right.
Marie went back to where Robbie was standing and closed the door. At least no one is likely to enter this place again and trash any remaining evidence in what could be our crime scene. Remember, Will Sheringham said the local explorers had already infiltrated this place years ago. Lisa and Anthony were making a short trip that night to show someone who hadn't seen it before.
But she's regretting it now, Robbie sighed.
They went downstairs and into the remains of the foyer. Max's kiosk was still there, advertising soft drinks and ice creams that Robbie could barely recall the taste of. No popcorn. He peered through the ticket office window and saw small items strewn around, as if someone had closed up for the night, fully expecting to return the next day. Pens, a packet of tissues, an opened packet of polo mints, and an old forgotten umbrella leaning drunkenly in one corner. Robbie wondered whose it was. Lost property? Maybe the ticket girl had simply left it behind.
This place is getting to you, isn't it? Said Marie softly.
Odd, really, he mused. I mean, we go into all sorts of abandoned properties, pulling out drug addicts and winos or looking for stolen goods, but that feels different. This place wouldn't appear on any Urbex's list of highlights, but even so, there's something about it, like you've stepped into a dream world.
Well, I guess I'm a bit of a Philistine. I see the muck and decay rather than echoes from the past. But I do feel sad when I think of all the laughter and fun that big old hall made possible. The Saturday morning kids' session was a riot. Now all that joy has gone, and it's nothing but a hollow shell. She shrugged.
Did you know it was first opened in the 1930s?
Doesn't surprise me, looking at the architecture. Or that art deco.
They pushed through big swing doors into the auditorium. Robbie looked up.
I'm betting those chandeliers are worth money. I wonder why the owners just abandoned it, leaving valuable things like that.
Happens all the time when things get too expensive to keep running, said Marie. I guess everyone watches films at home nowadays. Cinemas had to reinvent themselves, didn't they? Multiplexes and the like.
And now they're popular again,
Robbie added. All blockbusters full of explosive action and CGI. You really have to watch those on the big screen.
Marie nudged him gently in the ribs. Let's not forget why we're here.
Our missing explorer.
Robbie smiled sheepishly. Lost in the days of Art Deco and laughing children, sorry.
Nicer than abducted explorers, I'll give you that. Marie frowned.
But why? If he really was abducted, what for?
A grown man, someone who was positively adored by all accounts.
It doesn't make sense.
I don't think we're going to find the answer to that here, Robbie said. I guess we'd better go back and see what headway Max is making with Anthony's history. Maybe he has some connection with the other lad who went missing out at that airfield.
Yes, I've had enough of this place, thank you.
Let's hope the car is still in one piece. That was a shady old car park, all right, just perfect for drug deals, said Marie. Outside, it had begun to rain, a fine drizzle that threatened to soak them even on the short trip back to the car. Still, it felt good and fresh. Robbie felt he needed the rain to wash away the strange impression that he had taken something that didn't belong to him.
He wondered what it would feel like to enter some truly impressive abandoned property, a chateau or an old hospital. He shook himself.
As Marie had said, they were investigating a missing person. Well, two, and he needed to get back into detective mode.
Want to go and see Rundleby Airfield? He said suddenly. Give Max a bit more time.
Marie rolled her eyes.
Oh, why not? Perfect weather for a leisurely stroll around an abandoned aircraft hangar.
Sorry, Sarge. I'd like to get an idea of the location. It's somewhere I've never been before, and I need something to visualize. He looked at her hopefully. Marie unlocked the vehicle, fortunately just as they'd left it, and climbed in.
Okay, you're the boss. Point me in the right direction, or set the sat-nav because it's new to me, too. Robbie smiled. Thanks. Head towards Fenchester and I'll check out the exact location. Chapter 8 Orla Kraken looked out across the remote landscape, but she didn't see the crags of the mountain range or the endless Irish moorland. Her gaze remained focused on a tiny cottage that nestled in a valley where only birds and the wild animals now made their homes. The abandoned cottage was painted white, although the weather had stripped much of it away. The wooden shutters were closed, as if the old building slept, like the others in the neighbouring ghost villages, whose inhabitants had all fled Donegal at the time of the Great Famine. It wasn't Aurach's first visit. On the previous one she had committed every detail of the place to memory, and so long as the winds off the Atlantic Ocean had done no serious damage, it would suit her purpose perfectly. Now she was checking its accessibility and making sure that no one else had been using the place recently. She was on foot, having left her car a mile or so away. No good getting stuck somewhere, either on a flooded lane or a dead end. She could bring the car down later, and a car was easily spotted, whereas a lone figure, in camouflage, moving stealthily and close to the grey stone walls, would go unnoticed. It took her half an hour to reconnoitre the area, and now satisfied that all was well, she was making her way back to her car. Hopefully she would only be spending a day or two roughing it before she had an idea as to whether this mission had been worthwhile or not. Through a cleft in the hills, she caught the glimmer of the weak winter sun reflecting off the top of the waves some 2 miles ahead of her. She took it to be a positive sign. She had waited more than half her life for this. She couldn't be wrong. She just couldn't.
"I'm not sure what I was expecting," said Marie, "but it wasn't this."
Robbie looked around the deserted airfield and was forced to agree. "Most of it's just rubble. There's not even much of the control tower left." Across the scrubby field stood the ruined hulk of the tower, three old hangars and a few brick buildings that looked like stores. He could see nothing remarkable there, certainly nothing that might have attracted urban explorers.
"What a depressing spot," Marie said.
"I've been to several old Second World War airfields, and they all felt as if they had some historical significance. This has nothing, does it?"
"That's another odd thing," Robbie frowned. "D.S.
Holiday told me that this was a creepy spot, somewhere that had given rise to stories about ghostly dead airmen and all that. This place isn't spooky at all, is it? Just dreary."
"Makes me even more anxious to talk to my friend Ralph at Fenchester about that man," said Marie thoughtfully.
She gazed at the old hangars. "Do we know which one of these the boy was taken from?"
"Holiday said it was a big old place, so I'm guessing it has to be that one." He pointed to the largest hangar. "Shall we take a look?"
"Might as well, since we're here." Marie climbed out of the car.
"At least the rain has stopped."
Randleby was situated in the back of beyond, surrounded by ploughed fields and a stretch of ragged woodland. The high access gates were padlocked, and the perimeter fence was in remarkably good condition, considering it was no longer used. So it wasn't easy finding their way in. Finally, they found a small section of damaged wire fencing that must have been missed in the last maintenance check.
"This doesn't look like RAF to me. Does it you, Marie?"
Robbie asked, as they made their way across the weed-covered runway.
"And not just because of the absence of ghostly airmen."
"Can't say it does," she said. "I did a quick internet search when you first mentioned Randleby, and it's not listed as being a decommissioned site."
"Stella didn't know of it. And by the sound of it, her two Urbex friends who had had to back out on the night the lad disappeared didn't know about it either.
Considering some of the exciting places they've infiltrated in the past, I reckon this would have been a big disappointment to them." He thought about Razor and Butterwitch, recalled the stories Stella had told him about them, and wondered why on earth two seasoned explorers would want to come here anyway. Picking her way between the puddles, Marie muttered that this place certainly wouldn't inspire her to go adventuring.
"I suppose it could have been a trial run, just to show those other kids how to behave and how to conduct themselves."
Robbie stopped outside the biggest of the hangars.
"Well, I reckon this is probably where Aaron Smith went off the radar."
There was a big heavy chain and padlock across the huge doors. He tugged at it, but it held fast.
"I didn't get in this way.
Let's walk around the back. There's bound to be a personnel door."
Marie found the way in, and it wasn't through a door.
A small section of the back wall had buckled inwards, as if it had been struck by something heavy, leaving a gap just big enough to wriggle through. "I hope this is worth it," she grumbled. "If I tear my trousers, you pay, got it?"
Robbie chuckled. He liked it when Marie got grumpy. It always brought out her Welsh accent. He often wondered why, when she had lived half of her life here on the Fens, the Welsh lilt had remained. Still, it was a big part of what made her what she was. The interior of the hangar was gloomy, but not dark. Big dirty skylights lined the tops of the walls, allowing some natural light to filter in through the filth that encrusted them. The ceiling was a maze of criss-crossed metal girders. Robbie supposed that heavy airplane parts must have been winched up to them with pulleys. One wall was lined with solid workbenches and still bore various unidentifiable parts from many years before.
"This was not just a hangar to park your plane in," he murmured, and paused as his voice echoed around the big empty space.
"There was maintenance work done in here, wasn't there?"
"Definitely."
Marie was examining a pile of what looked like rusted metalwork beneath the bench. She pulled back a mouldering cover of sacking and gasped.
"Hell bloody fire, Rob. Come and look at this."
He hurried over and found her staring at an ancient motorcycle.
"Well, I'm damned.
You had to find a motorbike, didn't you?"
"It's a Norton. A16H.
The British Army used them for dispatch riders. They were solo bikes, unlike the more powerful version, the 633. That had a sidecar, and it was the only British bike to provide drive to the sidecar wheel. They used to have a rack for a light machine gun. I know this one is the smaller version, but Jesus, it's bloody brilliant."
Robbie laughed.
"That's cheered you up. Is there anything you don't know about motorbikes? That old wreck has to be about 80 years old.
"My Bill loved Nortons," Marie said, examining it carefully. "It's not in bad condition, considering how long it's been here. I wonder who owns this place."
"Please don't tell me you want it."
"It shouldn't be left here to rot, that's for sure. It belongs in an army museum, and in the right hands it's certainly not beyond being a restoration project."
"Okay, Sarge, we'll make inquiries. I hate to tell you this, but it's almost 4 o'clock and the daylight's going. It'll be dark in an hour. We need to check this place out for signs of a struggle before it's too late."
Marie carefully covered up her precious find.
"Good point, Rob. Sorry, got carried away."
They searched the hangar until they were no longer able to see properly. Then, having found nothing of importance, they made their way back to the car. On their drive back to Salton, Marie said, "We need to go back there."
"You aren't thinking of spiriting that bike away, are you?"
Robbie asked.
"Relax, I'm not thinking of nicking the bike. We should take a look in the smaller hangars, the storerooms, and maybe even that wreck of a control tower. The place doesn't ring true. It's not RAF, or so we are led to believe. And if it was a civil airfield, why did we just find a bike that was not only used by the British Army, but also the Royal Air Force? And some of that other junk on the benches. I'm no expert, but I swear some of that old stuff was military."
Robbie thought about it.
"I wonder if Stella's Urbex friends had discovered something, and that's why they were coming here. I'll ring Stella and get her to contact Razor and Butterwitch."
"Why not talk to them yourself, Rob?" said Marie. "It's their young friend that has gone missing. They'll be relieved to know you're following it up seriously."
"That's true. I'll get their number from Stella."
He called her, and after explaining that they were embarking on a full, if somewhat covert, investigation, he asked her for Ray Zakara's phone number.
"Actually, Robbie, he's coming round here tonight, and so is Emily. Why don't you and Ella join us? We're having a Chinese takeaway, so we could discuss it then."
"Love to. I need to check that Ella isn't on call tonight, but if she's free, we'd love to see you all. I haven't seen Tom for ages."
7:30. Just ring if you can't make it, okay? And thanks, Rob. I owe you."
Robbie ended the call and told Marie about the proposed meeting.
"That's perfect," said Marie.
"Your razor might just open up if you're all having a relaxing evening. I really do have the strangest feeling about Brandleby."
It could have been her influence, but Robbie was starting to feel that way too. All was not as it seemed at Brandleby Airfield. Grant Leach arrived at his friend Ron Morley's flat at 5 o'clock on the dot. Ron lived on the upper floor of a small maisonette in Salton Town,
and let Grant store all his equipment there. He still lived with his parents and they kept an immaculate home that didn't have room for all the things he needed for urban exploration. He was 24 years old, with a love for the outdoors and an adventurous nature. He loved his parents and tried to respect their house rules, but it wasn't easy. Ron, on the other hand, was somewhat more relaxed. Muddy boots? No problem.
Come on in, mate. It'll hoover up when it dries.
Nothing fazed Ron. He gave lay back a whole new meaning, and Grant always felt comfortable with him. The door was open when he got there, and Ron was going through a checklist of what they might need. It was just the two of them tonight, which was how Grant preferred it. Brought the new batteries, he called out as he went in. A bag of tea lights and some dust masks. I think we're getting low on them.
Good stuff, Grant. Want a cuppa or a beer?
Ron asked.
No, thanks. I'll be wanting to pee all evening.
He looked over the stuff laid out on the lounge floor. Looking good. Phone all charged up?
Ron nodded. 100%. And tonight I'm going to play with an old camera my uncle gave me, if I can fathom out how to use an SLR with no digital help. All I know is he took some awesome pictures with the old thing. We got plenty of time, and the weather forecast is good. Rain's cleared away and they've promised a clear night.
Grant began packing things into his rucksack.
You said you'd done a recce in daylight?
Ron's eyes lit up. It looked pretty remarkable even then.
Should be mind-blowing at night.
Should we post our pictures when we've vetted them? Grant asked. Sometimes they kept special places to themselves.
Let's play it by ear. This could be special.
Ron pulled on his rambling boots.
So how come we missed it before?
Asked Grant.
Just one of those things, I guess.
The fire happened ages ago, and it looks as though the insurance didn't cover the rebuilding. You can't see it from the road at all. It's just been forgotten.
Simple.
Ron grinned at him.
And by going tonight, we beat Cruncher's crew by a day. I intercepted a couple of messages on his site telling his clan to meet up tomorrow.
Neat. Grant checked his pockets, and then did a final check.
Good to go, my man.
Me too.
Ron's grin widened.
I've got a feeling tonight is going to be quite a night.
Then lead on. To East Fleet Manor.
When Jackman arrived home, Laura was just locking her car. They kissed and then let themselves into the old mill house.
Good day, he asked her.
He still kept pinching himself at the thought that they were really a couple at last. Laura smiled at him.
Bit stressful, but nothing a hot bath and a glass of something alcoholic won't cure. What about you?
Remarkably quiet, although I know I shouldn't use the Q word. If we knew that Orak was safe, things would be pretty well perfect.
It was hard to believe that they were no longer living under Alistair Ashcroft's shadow, and even harder to describe the relief that knowledge brought. It was like a deliverance. Light restored to a darkened room.
I rang Sam today. He says he's doing well on his own now, but he does worry me, darling.
Laura's blue eyes clouded for a moment. Sam Page, a dear friend of Laura's, and a man who had been both tutor and father figure to her, had been badly injured, another victim of the evil Ashcroft. He had stayed with them for a few months in order to recuperate. Last week, he had gone home to his cottage down on the marsh, at the edge of a bird reserve, and Laura fretted about him. Much as Jackman loved being alone with Laura, after all they hadn't been living together for long and things were still pretty intense, he worried too.
"Do you think he should come back for a bit longer?" he asked.
"He's so independent, isn't he? But I'm really not happy about him being all alone out there. It's too remote. It's the nights that bother me. If he had a fall or an attack of some kind, I'd never forgive myself."
Jackman hung up his coat, went to one of the kitchen cupboards, and took out two wine glasses. A bottle of Malbec waited on the counter. He smiled to himself. He and Hetty Maynard, who cleaned and sometimes cooked for him, had an agreement. If he left a bottle of red wine on the counter when he went to work, she would open it for him just before she left so he could breathe. The little ritual never failed. He poured them both a glass, pulled out two chairs and smiled at her.
"Sit down and take a nice long sip."
He sat down a glass in front of her. She drank and sighed.
"Ah, I can feel the stress easing already."
"That's the plan," said Jackman. "Now,"
he reached across the table and touched her hand. "I'm going to make this suggestion. Talk to Sam. and make him an offer to live here permanently. If he would like to. I'm more than happy to finish off the work on the old mill tower and kit it out as a self-contained flat. After all, the floor above your consulting room is already cleared and plastered and painted. Ask if he'd like to be our lodger, on a permanent basis. Her eyes widened.
He owns his cottage, doesn't he? Jackman said. He could keep it for the summers and go bird-watching whenever he liked, but this would be his base. A safe place to be, especially in winter. He would be completely independent from us. I can already see him and old Len Maynard working out how to create a wild garden outside his back door.
Really?
A smile spread across her face, and she exhaled.
You're an extraordinary man, Rowan Jackman. It's no wonder I love you.
Actually, I've been called quite a lot of things in my time as a copper, but I'll settle for that. He grinned at her. And I love you for caring about the old chap so much.
The rest of the evening passed in a happy blur, while they made their plans and just enjoyed each other's company. Such contentment was rare for Jackman. He knew from experience that life had a habit of throwing spanners into the works, but right now, it didn't get much better than this, and he was grateful. Chapter 9 Ella Jarvis had been held up on a call, but she insisted that Robbie go and see Stella and her Urbex friends. Robbie and Ella had a good relationship. They weren't joined at the hip, nor did they object if the other needed to go somewhere alone. Robbie was very fond of Ella, but was it love? He was certainly happy, so maybe not everyone had to experience fireworks. He guessed he was just a phlegmatic type of guy. Stella and Tom Chalk lived in a barn conversion in the grounds of the family farm. Tom had been managing the land since his father died, as none of his three brothers had any particular love of agriculture. Stella opened the door and invited him in.
Sorry Ella couldn't make it. Tell her no excuses next time. I'll cook for just the four of us.
It's a deal. Robbie looked around. Tom had done a brilliant job on the conversion. He'd designed it and also done most of the graft himself. Tom was a quiet, unassuming man. Other than Stella and the farm, his abiding passion was urban exploration, which he'd been doing since his school days. Until recently, no matter what the weather, he had managed to go out once a month with Ray and Emily. Now, he had different priorities, and his Cheshire cat grin told Robbie that he was going to be just as proud a father as Max. Robbie handed Tom a bottle.
This is for you guys, not for tonight, it's for you to celebrate with together.
Hey, champagne!
Tom clapped him on the shoulder. Thank you. We'll save it until you and Ella come for dinner. Sound good to you, Stell?
Sounds perfect. Thank you, Robbie. That's very sweet of you.
The doorbell rang.
That'll be Ray and Emily. They're bringing the food, so get ready, folks. Plates are warming in the oven.
The next 10 minutes were a furore of greetings and the unpacking of enough food to feed a small army. Ray and Emily, or Razor and Butterwitch, as they had first been introduced to him, were as friendly as ever, but obviously anxious. After they had all helped themselves from the various dishes, Emily said,
We're so grateful for what you're doing, for Aaron, Robbie. We both feel terribly responsible for what happened to him.
We should have told the others to back off and wait for us, Ray said, but the sight seemed so innocuous. We never dreamed anything would happen.
Absolutely, added Emily. No climbing, no tunnels, no particularly unsafe buildings except for the control tower, and that was a no-go area because of the damage. If you don't mind me asking, what made you want to explore Randleby Airfield? Robbie said.
Marie and I found it a depressingly boring place. He grinned. Oh, apart from Marie discovering an ancient 1930s motorcycle, and then I thought she was going to explode. She's already planning its repatriation to a museum of some kind.
Robbie noticed Ray glance quickly at Emily. After a moment's pause, Ray said,
It puzzled us, Robbie. It didn't add up. Other crews have been there in the past and written it off as a bit of a damp squib, added Emily. A something and a nothing.
Well, we went because one of our new kids is into aviation history in a big way, and as he hasn't been exploring for long, we thought Randleby might be of interest to him. It was a pretty simple bimble for them.
Including Aaron Smith? He asked.
No, Aaron isn't really a novice. He's been going out with us for a couple of years off and on. He's really into exploration.
He's always encouraging others to have a go. Been like it since his school days, apparently. He just didn't have a group to explore with. It's the other two who are beginners, and I think what happened has scared them off for life.
Emily frowned.
Shame, because they show all the signs of being good urbexers.
You're saying the airfield didn't add up? Robbie prompted.
We did some research, Ray said.
We always do. You have to gather what information you can before you infiltrate somewhere new.
He laid down his chopsticks.
The thing is, it's not supposed to be military. But the layout isn't quite right for a small civil airfield either. And not only that, there are no records of it anywhere that we can find.
We got the same feeling, and we only spent an hour there, said Robbie. And that old bike Murray found was definitely ex-military.
As I said, it doesn't make sense, Ray frowned. We believe there is a secret about that place, but we have no idea why or what.
Or, added Emily, whether Aaron's disappearance has anything to do with it.
Robbie thought for a moment.
I doubt it, Emily, considering another urbexer had already gone missing. That guy from the Greenborough cinema. I can't believe it's connected to a particular location. Much more likely it's about the explorers themselves.
Aaron's no trouble, Robbie, said Emily. He fell out with his family, I believe, but he works hard and he's a nice lad. I cannot imagine him doing anything that would antagonize someone that much, certainly not to the point of abducting or hurting him.
Stella and Tom had been quiet during this discussion. Now Stella said,
And Anthony Hood, well, he's a bit of an urbex hero. He's well-liked and respected throughout the community.
I can't think of a soul who might wish him harm, added Tom.
Well, I've got my work cut out, haven't I? Robbie said.
Stella smiled at him.
If anyone can get to the bottom of this, Robbie, it's you.
Robbie felt a surge of affection for his old crewmate.
I wish you were working this case with me, Stella. I reckon we'd sort it in half the time it'll take me, even with Marie and Max.
We have our ears to the ground, Rob, never fear. Tom grinned at him.
We're putting out feelers right across the local community. Nothing to frighten people, just asking for people to contact us if they hear or see anything untoward while they're exploring.
He looked at Stella. Stella has started a closed group on Facebook for some trusted urbex friends.
If anything turns up, I'll be on the phone like greased lightning, Rob, don't you worry.
Stella looked just as she had in the old days, when she'd got her teeth into an interesting case, and Robbie felt a pang of nostalgia.
They had been so good together.
They spent the rest of the evening talking about some of the group's latest adventures, Tom's farm, and Stella's big news about the baby. The only thing marring a perfect evening was the undercurrent of anxiety about the two missing urbexers. Before he left, Robbie asked if they would email him everything they could about Aaron Smith.
He wanted to build up a picture of that young man. Find out what happened to him, Robbie.
Emily sounded almost desperate.
I feel so guilty about that kid, and I'm not going to rest easy until we know what happened.
I'll find him.
There was no alternative. Robbie had to find him. And Anthony Hood. If he had to march all over every division in the Fenland Constabulary to do it. Fit and healthy young men did not just vanish off the face of the earth. As he drove home to Salton, he remembered the piece of glass that Marie had retrieved. Since he hadn't seen Ella tonight, it would be another day before he could get it to her. Then his thoughts turned to Randleby Airfield.
Why was there no mention of the place, anywhere? It was as if it had been wiped off the face of the earth. But why?
While Robbie was eating Chinese, Marie had been having a very interesting conversation. Ralph, the Fanchester DS who had been so helpful to her over the Ashcroft inquiry, sounded really pleased to hear from her again.
The whole station was cheering when we heard the news that Ashcroft had been sent to a Cat A prison. We'd wondered if they'd opt for a secure hospital, but they got it right. He's where he belongs at last. And you, Marie Evans, are a bit of a local hero in this station.
Marie brushed this aside.
I don't think your DS Holiday would agree with you.
She told him how he had more or less ordered Robbie to drop his inquiries into the missing lad, Aaron Smith.
Mick Holiday? That's odd. He's usually a good old boy.
Are you sure your DC didn't misunderstand him? Ralph asked.
Dead certain. And he was the same with DC Cat Cullen of Greenborough.
Ralph was silent for a moment.
Now you come to mention it, he does seem to be acting a bit weird over that case.
I offered to pitch in and give him a hand, but my super said it was already receiving full attention, and I was not required. Didn't think too much of it at the time. But if Mickey's trying to dissuade both you and Greenborough from interfering, it makes me wonder what's going on.
Do a little digging for me, Ralph, could you?
For you, Marie, anything. Marie ended the call feeling all the more uneasy about what was going on, but at least now they had an ally. Grant Leach and Ron Morley came to a halt in the overgrown driveway and stared up at the fire-ravaged hotel.
"Awesome,"
whispered Grant.
"Thought you'd like it,"
said Ron.
"And look at that moon. When it's a bit higher in the sky, it will just be above those burnt roof timbers. That could be a fantastic image,"
Grant exclaimed.
"Half an hour, I'd say," said Ron. "Let's get inside and do a recce, and then come back and get some outside shots."
He pointed to two of the upstairs windows in the undamaged part of the building.
"Listen, I've got a battery lantern and some candles, so why don't I set up a hidden light source, just to give a soft glow coming from those two windows? It would give a contrast to the eeriness of the ruined part." "Nice one, Ron. I'll set up my tripod and leave it here, so we know where to shoot from. It's not as if anyone's going to come along and nick it."
"Good idea.
Right, let's find a way in."
Ron walked ahead, while Grant set up the tripod. He joined Ron beside the building.
"There's a side door that's not secured properly," said Ron. "I checked it out the other day, but I only did a quick walkthrough. No major hazards in the undamaged side, but the burnt-out area is lethal. I'd not recommend getting anywhere near that lot. It could cave in at any moment."
"Understood. Well done for getting us here before Cruncher's crew," Grant said.
"He's going to be well jarred off when he sees our footprints in the dust."
In seconds, they were inside. Ron stopped short and pointed to the floor.
"You mentioned footprints, didn't you? Look."
Grant grunted.
"Ah, not quite the virgin site we'd imagined.
And they're not yours from your first trip.
They're much smaller."
"A woman's, I'd say," Ron shrugged. "Maybe I wasn't the first one to see Cruncher's message, and she's beaten us to it. Well, good luck to her, whoever she is."
"Let's hope she's not a photographer," Grant said. "I'd really like to be the first to post photos of this incredible place on the web. It's years since I've seen anywhere so atmospheric."
"It is, isn't it?" said Ron. "I suggest we move on and look at the main hall. And you don't want to miss your window of opportunity to get that special exterior shot." Grant could already visualize it. One of those once-in-a-lifetime shots. They wandered around taking picture after picture, and then Ron set up the lights in the window for Grant's planned outdoor shot.
"You go on ahead," he said. "I've just seen a possibility for a great photo using this lighting and looking through to the fire-damaged section. Plus, I'd like to try and get something special with the old camera."
Grant couldn't wait to get out into the crisp night air. He drew his jacket closer around him and hurried off down the drive. He glanced back at the bright silver moon being chased by dark, scudding clouds, forming the perfect backdrop to the brooding remains of the old hotel.
"This'll be epic,"
he murmured to himself. Ron took a series of shots with his digital camera, all of which pleased him. Then he took up the weighty old SLR camera. It felt good to handle, and he spent longer than he had intended experimenting with it. It must have been 30 minutes before he decided to go and get some exterior shots of his own. He doused the lights, collected the lantern and candles, and made his way back downstairs. He secured the side door, just in case Grant didn't want to go back inside, and headed for the spot his friend had chosen. The tripod was where they had left it, but it stood alone in the driveway. Ron stopped and looked around. Grant must have moved to another vantage point. But where? There was no sign of him, and no sound of movement. The cloud cover thickened, and for a moment Ron was completely enveloped in darkness.
"Grant," he called tentatively.
Then louder,
"Grant? Come on, mate. Where are you?"
This was not how you worked. You didn't deviate from your agreed plans. That was how accidents happened.
"Grant, where the fuck are you?"
Ron began to grow afraid.
It was so still.
So silent. Ron had never been a lone explorer. He liked the feeling of camaraderie, the sharing of finds. He never went out alone at night.
He went back to the tripod and stared at it. Why did he have the feeling that Grant had never got as far as setting up his camera? He tried to think rationally. He knew that Grant had not gone back into the derelict hotel. He would have heard or seen him. So where was he? Ron took out his phone. They always had them on, set to mute or vibrate. There was no answer, and his call finally went to voicemail. He left a message, asking him to ring back at once. Then he texted, repeating the same message. What to do? He supposed he'd better search the grounds, just in case Grant had met with an accident. He could easily have fallen. There could be overgrown debris from the part of the building that had collapsed. There could be all manner of dangers lurking in the undergrowth, twisted metal or rotten wood. Grant could have dropped his phone and been unable to reach it. Ron set out to hunt for his friend. After half an hour, he gave up. He made his way back to his car, in the faint hope that he'd find Grant waiting for him. But there was no sign of him. He unlocked the car and climbed into the driver's seat. Then, with a shaking hand, he locked it again. Grant was not a practical joker. This was not some stupid game. Something had happened to him. He recalled the rumors that had been spreading on the Urbex sites about a couple of explorers going missing, but he dismissed them as attempts to prevent young, inexperienced kids taking up the pastime. Now, he wished he'd paid them more attention. What should he do? Should he stay? Just in case Grant had been hurt and managed to get himself back to the car. Or should he go for help? But where would he go at this time of night? They were miles from anywhere. Shivering and frightened, Ron sat for another hour. Then he called 999. Callie rang Will Sheringham at 9:30 in the evening, sounding almost hysterical. This was not like Callie. Slow down, Callie. Take it from the beginning. As she told him what had happened to her, his shoulders tightened. This didn't sound good. Callie was accustomed to going out alone at night and didn't spook easily. You're sure it was another person in there with you, and not just rats or structural movement? He asked, well aware of the odd noises a damaged building could make. It was footsteps, no question, said Callie, and I'm pretty sure it was a man. It was a firm, heavy tread. Oh, Will, I've gone over and over this trying to tell myself that I was imagining it, but the fact is I wasn't alone in that old hotel. You know there have been disappearances lately, don't you, Callie? Yes. I've been looking at the sites. One of them is Anthony, isn't it? That's why I'm so worried. I saw a message from another crew saying they were heading there tomorrow. What should I do? Will frowned. Which crew? Cruncher's clan, I think. I don't know him at all. I do. I think I should warn him, don't you, Callie? Please do, Will. And whoever was in there never followed me out. If they'd wanted to hurt me, they had plenty of opportunity, but they let me walk away. So, if this has any connection with the two previous incidents, there's a good chance he was checking the place out with the intention of taking someone else, not you, Will suggested. That's all I could think, Callie said miserably. I had a close call, but someone else might not be so lucky. Look, Callie, we are working with the police on this. I'm going to pass it on. The detective we are speaking to is a nice bloke. His name is D.C. Melton. He's not going to make waves about what we do. He just wants to get the person responsible, okay? Give him my mobile number and I'll talk to him too, if it helps. She paused. I've never been so scared, Will. And you know me. I've been exploring for years. I don't do scared. Will laughed. I know you don't. Sorry, but I didn't know who else to tell. I'm really glad you called, Callie. This could be important. I'll get hold of D.C. Melton right now. I'll keep you updated. As soon as he'd hung up, Will told Lisa what Callie had said. She urged him to call the detective. Do it now, Will. He won't mind that it's getting late. Robbie Melton answered almost at once, and Will passed on what Callie had said. Robbie took a while to answer. Actually, Will, I think this has come a bit late. I've just had a call to go out to a place called East Fleet Manor. Another Urbexer has gone missing from a burnt-out hotel. Oh, my God. Will stared at Lisa.
You don't know who it is, do you, D.C. Melton?
I don't know anything yet, Will. I'm just on my way there now. But I'll need a statement tomorrow, and one from the girl who was in the place last night. I'll be in touch.
Will ended the call. Too late, babe. The police are already on their way to East Fleet Manor. Another explorer has disappeared. Lisa closed her eyes.
Someone really has it in for us, don't they?
And until they find him, I'm going to ask you to stay at home, my love. No more trips out until it's safe again. For a moment, she seemed about to refuse. Then she relented and nodded.
Okay, sweetheart. I have no wish to get hijacked by some faceless stranger.
She kissed him lightly.
I'll be good, I promise.
Well, for a while, anyway. Good enough. He took her hand and squeezed it.
I love you, kid.
I'd be worried sick if you went out while this monster was lurking in the shadows.
I know, but don't worry, I'm not a fool. This is a nasty situation.
She frowned.
Should we tell Callie?
Now there was a question. Callie was already feeling bad about not having mentioned it before, and she would be doubly upset if she thought that her procrastination had meant someone else had been taken.
Not tonight.
She sounded freaked out enough already without hearing this. I'll ring her tomorrow and warn her that the police will be in touch, and tell her what's happened.
And there was me thinking that the police could set a trap tomorrow night when Cruncher went out there, maybe even catch the guy in action.
Lisa sighed.
But he got there first. I wonder who it was tonight.
Chapter 10. Robbie saw the blue lights of a patrol car up ahead of him, and was glad they had got here first. He didn't know this area, and the sat-nav didn't seem to recognize it. He was pretty sure he would have driven straight past. He parked just inside the drive and hurried over to where two uniformed officers were talking to a young man.
"This is Ron Morley, D.C. Melton," said one of the constables. "He says that he and his friend were taking photographs of this old ruin by moonlight, and his friend, Grant Leach, has disappeared. We were told that if anything like this occurred, we should get you out to deal with it."
The constable looked at him apologetically.
"No matter what the time."
"That's right," Robbie said. "No problem."
He introduced himself to Ron, who was obviously distraught.
"I didn't believe all that stuff on the web. Oh, God, we should never have come out. Where is Grant?"
Robbie tried to sound reassuring.
"Hey, come on. So far there's no indication that anyone has been hurt. So let's take it steady, Ron. I know a fair bit about urban exploring, but I need you to tell me exactly what happened, and how come you two split up, okay?"
Ron took a deep breath.
"I'm sorry, Detective. I just don't understand what's happened to him. When we got here, we realized that the moon rising behind the damaged part of the hotel would make a great photograph. Grant set up his tripod to mark the spot for later, and then we went inside. I was experimenting with an old camera and decided to stay on for a bit while Grant went out to get his exterior shots."
He bit hard on his bottom lip.
"I got carried away, and when I realized that over half an hour had passed, I went outside to see how he was getting on."
He spread his arms wide.
"But he'd gone. Just vanished. The tripod was still there, standing where we'd left it."
Robbie went over the times with him, and then decided to take a look inside the derelict property himself, while Uniform searched the grounds.
"I'll show you how we got in if you like," said Ron. "I don't fancy being out here on my own. This has totally spooked me."
"That would be a help, Ron," said Robbie.
"And if it's any consolation, I'd feel the same if I was in your shoes."
Robbie followed the Urbexa into the old hotel. He gazed around, and once again felt that thrill of excitement. Stella was going to be pretty surprised when he told her he was beginning to understand the kick she had got from exploring. He asked Ron about him and Grant. They were really good friends, had been for years. The more Ron talked, the more certain Robbie became that something bad had happened to Grant Leach. No way would Grant have pulled a disappearing act on his best mate. Ron showed him where he had set up his camera for the indoor shots, through to the fire-damaged area.
"We never went further than here. Grant took a few shots, then hurried back out to catch the rising moon."
"He went back the same way?" asked Robbie.
"Almost certainly. He hadn't been here before. It was me who did the daylight recce, and I'd made him promise not to go through the damaged section. It's far too dangerous."
Ron gave a short laugh.
"Turns out that's not the only dangerous part."
He stopped and turned to Robbie.
as someone abducted him, officer.
There was no point denying it.
It looks that way, Ron. In truth, we have no idea what has happened, but we'll find out, I promise you.
Grant's a good guy,
Ron gasped, and his face took on a look of horror.
Oh, no. What the hell am I going to tell his parents?
Robbie patted Ron's arm.
That's our job, mate, not yours. But let's not jump the gun.
There's a lot of ground to cover here, and it's dark. He didn't know the terrain, did he? There's a chance he's fallen, trying to get his shots. If he'd knocked himself out, he certainly wouldn't be answering his phone. Robbie didn't believe his words any more than Ron did, but he supposed there was an outside chance that Grant Leach was lying somewhere in the undergrowth.
Let's get back outside and see if the other officers have found anything.
They went back to the patrol car. One of the constables, a young copper called Ian, caught up with them.
There's nothing we can see, Robbie, but there's a lot of debris when you get closer to the fire-damaged area. It's far too dangerous to go there in the dark. We've called out and shone our torches into every nook and cranny that we can get near, but neither of us thinks anyone has been that way for ages. It's too overgrown.
Robbie thanked him.
I guess there's little more we can do tonight, but I'm going to get some guys out here at first light. This could be a crime scene.
Want us to cordon the entrance off?
Asked Ian.
Robbie thought about it. If they taped the area off, someone would have to stay the night, and resources were pretty stretched.
He looked back down the drive. The lone tripod stood there in the moonlight, like a sign.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll contact your sergeant and get him to arrange for you to be relieved in a couple of hours. I don't want anyone going in here before daybreak. If Grant Leach was abducted, there should be signs of a scuffle, and we won't see it with a couple of torches.
And me? Asked Ron. What should I do?
Are you up to coming to the station and making a statement?
Robbie asked.
I can do it as soon as we get back, so as not to hold you up too much.
Sure, I'll follow you.
Ron paused and stared back at the tripod.
I feel awful walking away, knowing Grant could still be here somewhere. You won't be leaving him alone. These officers will help him if he does make his way back to the entrance. And if he's hurt, they'll have an ambulance out here in no time, okay?
Grant would not be making an appearance that night. The others certainly hadn't. Anthony Hood and Aaron Smith had vanished into thin air, and Robbie was pretty sure that Grant had gone the same way. He drove back to town, almost relieved. This had happened on their patch, and was now Salton the Fen's responsibility. He had a proper investigation to conduct, and any inquiries he made of the other divisions were totally in order. One thing was for sure. He, Robbie Melton, wouldn't be assuming anyone had simply done a runner. He was looking for a very dangerous person who waited in darkened abandoned buildings for urban explorers and took them away. Robbie shuddered.
What for?
Why? And were the missing guys even still alive? Midnight. Lisa and Will Sheringham were still awake. Will had rung Kelvin Elliott, known as Cruncher, and warned him not to visit Eastfleet Manor. Kelvin had been disappointed, but knowing that Will was no scaremonger, accepted his advice.
And in any case, the place will probably be off limits and have police crawling all over it, Will had added.
Kelvin had whistled softly.
This is all getting a bit weird for me, mate. I'm going back to the day job until they find the creep that's doing this.
Sounds like a very sensible move, man. If you hear anything on the grapevine, will you let me know?
Lisa and I are helping the police as much as we can. We want this to be over.
Cruncher had agreed wholeheartedly and promised to keep in touch. Now, after posting warnings on every urbex site they could think of, they sat drinking tea and wondering what more they could do to help.
I'm a bit worried that some of the crews will go out just to hunt for whoever is stalking urbexes, said Lisa, anxiously.
Like vigilantes? Will sipped his tea. Yeah, that's possible, though I wouldn't recommend it. We don't even know. If it's one person, it could be two or more.
My mind keeps going into overdrive, trying to imagine what has happened to our friends. Now there's another one and we don't even know who it is yet, Lisa said.
Will felt the same. Other than Cruncher, no one had mentioned going out there. He wondered how it was that Callie had walked away unharmed.
Then it struck him. Lisa. Whoever it is,
They're targeting particular Urbexes. That's why Callie was allowed to leave the hotel unharmed. I'm willing to bet that the mystery predator has a list of names, and Callie Prothero wasn't on it.
Lisa frowned. He could have been checking the place out when she went. If he wasn't ready, maybe he just let her go.
Lisa, think about it. Callie is slight. She probably weighs less than 50 kilos. She'd be a walk in the park for someone who could spirit away a muscular 6-foot male, don't you think?
Then you should tell that to DC Robbie Melton.
He might well have worked it out for himself, but yes, first thing tomorrow. He looked at the clock above the fireplace. Right now, we need to get some sleep. We've done all we can tonight, sweetheart. Let's turn in.
You're right. I'm drained.
Well, at least someone is finally taking us seriously.
Will had liked Robbie Melton. He sensed the policeman understood the Urbexes and would give them his support, especially with Stella North behind him. It certainly wasn't always like that. A lot of coppers considered them mindless trespassers with nothing better to do with their lives than make a nuisance.
It was refreshing to meet Robbie, and Will had a feeling that if anyone could help them, Robbie could.
Orak was beginning to realize that all the time spent sitting at a computer had rendered her less fit than she realized. She had always exercised, making sure she went for a run every night, no matter how late it was when she left the lab. She had often sprinted past coppers who saw her every day at work, but in her hooded running top and leggings, she was anonymous. But she hadn't been fully prepared to go into action again, and that was dangerous.
"I need to be better prepared," she whispered softly to herself. "My life could depend on it. Suppose I was being hunted down."
Before settling for the night, she went around the small room and checked that it was as secure as could be, considering the decrepit state of the place. She had a small battery-powered lantern and a nightlight, and the shutters were tight. She was certain she was on the right track, and tomorrow she would know for sure. Orak unpacked her tiny, lightweight gas stove. It was small enough to carry in a pocket, and perfect for solo backpackers. She boiled a kettle to make herself some instant soup. In a cold, damp place like this, a hot drink was essential. Wrapping herself in her thermal sleeping bag, she thought back to the people she had left behind in Sultan the Fen. She regretted leaving her small and trusted team without a word, and Marie Evans, though she suspected that clever Marie would have recalled what she had said about her sister and put two and two together. Her guardians, of course, would go straight to her flat and take her computer, not that they would find anything on it. She hated the thought of faceless officials nosing around in her private space, but it would be a small price to pay if she managed to establish whether her darling little Grania was still alive. Not that she would be little now. She had been gone for 24 years, and her sister would be 27. But the pain of losing her had never abated. Orak closed her eyes, and the image of that cheeky smile and those beautiful dark eyes rose before her.
"I will find you," she whispered. "I will."
Chapter 11. Marie walked into the CID room that morning to be greeted with a chorus of, "Your phone's ringing." She ran to her desk.
"Yes, Marie Evans, how can I help you?"
"Ralph here, Marie, from Fanchester."
"Ah, good morning, Ralph. Have you been ferreting around for me?" she asked eagerly.
"Yes, and getting myself a swift reprimand in the process. Not your fault."
Ralph lowered his voice.
"Can I have your mobile number, Marie? I'm going to phone you from outside the office." She gave him her number.
"This is getting more and more intriguing by the minute. Give me 5 minutes and I'll ring you back, okay?"
He rang off, leaving Marie staring at the phone. She hadn't meant to get him into trouble. But how come a detective would receive a telling off for asking about some old disused airfield? She took off her jacket and sat down. Then there was that old Norton motorbike, the thought of which still haunted her. She had to find out who owned that place and work out a way to rescue that piece of biking history.
"Morning, Sarge."
Robbie and Gary came in together. Gary looked ready for anything after his time out at a refresher course. Robbie looked like shit. She grinned at him.
"What night on the town with the gorgeous Ella, was it?"
Actually, it was a bloody cold night in a burnt-out hotel looking for another missing Urbex warrior.
Her smile evaporated.
Another one?
Yep, but it's on our patch, Marie. We're official. No more tiptoeing around the other stations. We can tread on whatever feet we like.
Despite the circles under his eyes, Robbie looked elated.
I managed to see Ella before she left for work this morning. She's taken the glass fragment into the lab for analysis.
Marie felt much happier knowing they were working in the open at last. Before she could ask who had gone missing and where, her mobile rang.
Got to take this, Robbie. Grab yourself a strong coffee and I'll be with you in 5.
I need one. You?
She nodded, mouthing, please.
Marie, Ralph again. Look, I'm not sure what's going on, but I've been well and truly warned off.
Marie groaned.
I'm so sorry, that was definitely not my intention. For heaven's sake, don't get into trouble over this.
If someone asked me to drop something and gives me a bloody good reason, all well and good, but to get arsy with me and not tell me why, that stinks.
Ralph was evidently well upset.
I'm not letting this go for 1 minute. Bugger them.
What happened?
She asked.
Well, I cornered Mick Holliday in the men's toilet. There wasn't anyone else around, so I asked him what the lowdown was on Randleby Airfield. He went all cagey on me, said he'd no idea what I was talking about. I told him that I didn't come down in the last shower, and there was something going on. Then he said he'd been told to assure anyone asking questions about that kid's disappearance that he was a runaway, and that no further investigation was necessary.
Like he told my colleague, Robbie Melton.
Exactly. And DC Cat Cullen.
Ralph paused, drew in a breath.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure he has no idea what's behind it all. He's a nice bloke most of the time, but he can be a bit of a stickler for the rules. If he's told to do something, he does it, if you get my meaning. Doesn't ask questions. So he was in the middle of telling me that he did think it had something to do with the airfield itself when the super walks in.
And he heard? Asked Marie.
Just the word Randleby. Well, he marched me out of that kazi like a dose of salt straight upstairs.
Really? That sounds a bit extreme.
All you were doing was asking a mate about an old airfield that a kid had disappeared from. I know. He gave me a long spiel about not stirring up suspicions, and that the family wanted it kept low-key because their son had run away several times before. He also said that there was considerable confusion over the ownership of Randleby Airfield, and that there was some sort of legal battle going on. Frankly, Marie, I didn't believe a word he said.
Marie frowned.
Well, you back right off, Ralph. This isn't your problem. I'm really sorry I got you into trouble.
Please. It's not a problem, honestly. I've got a good record here, and I think I convinced the super that I was just being curious. I'll keep my head down and my eyes and ears open, and I'll update you as soon as anything else surfaces, okay?
Marie smiled.
Ralph, it seemed, was something of a terrier.
Just be careful. But there's something you ought to know.
She told him there had been another disappearance, but this time on their turf.
Well, I'm sorry that someone else has gone missing, but glad it's your case. That makes things easier for you, doesn't it? Keep me updated on what you find out, and then maybe we can liaise, officially, Ralph said.
Sure. It helps to know that your senior officers are being so guarded about that airfield. At least we won't wade in and get fobbed off. I'll tread carefully and do as much investigating as I can without involving Fenchester.
Better go. Keep in touch, Marie.
We'll do, Ralph. And keep your head below the parapet.
Marie dropped her phone back in her pocket. Robbie was approaching, carrying 2 coffees.
Gary wants to know what you've got for him to do. The boss is up with the super, and he's at a loose end.
Until we know different, I suggest we bring him up to speed on our Urbex problem, after you've given him the news about Ashcroft, of course.
He already knows, Sarge. It was all over HQ while he was on his course. He's as chuffed as we are,
Robbie yawned.
I'm not quite as good at these back-to-back shifts as I used to be.
Did you get any sleep at all? She asked.
Catnapped for a couple of hours, if that.
Well, I suggest you get off early today and catch up. Jackman will be fine with it. We don't want you nodding off behind the wheel.
Robbie looked far too tired for such a relatively young man. He normally coped pretty easily with weird hours, but today he looked really rough.
Maybe I'll do just that. No, I'll fill you in on last night's fun and games.
He beckoned to Gary and Max.
I'll gather the gang, rather than tell it 3 times.
When Robbie had finished, Marie asked,
"This Cully Prothero, have you spoken to her yet?"
"Only to ask her to come in and make a statement."
He glanced at the clock.
"She'll be here soon, sometime around 9.
She's very upset, Sarge. She's beating herself up about not reporting it sooner.
If she never even saw anyone, and she wasn't supposed to be there in the first place, I don't blame her, said Max.
Wasting police time with a ghost story about a creepy old ruin that you were trespassing in, I'd think twice too.
Yeah, it's very easy to know what you should have done with hindsight, added Gary.
Even so, she sounded pretty shaky. Perhaps you should lead the interview, Sarge.
That gentle Welsh lilt should calm her down. Robbie grinned. Works for me every time.
Marie returned the grin.
What crap, Melton?
It scares the pants off some people, I'll have you know.
But yes, I'll lead, if only because you look like you could nod off mid-interview.
Robbie pulled a face.
Sorry, I'll brighten up after a couple of coffees.
He turned to Max.
So, how did you get on with your searches on Anthony Hood and Aaron Smith?
Max frowned.
Well, mate, I got a whole load of info, but there doesn't seem to be any connection between the two of them, and both are squeaky clean.
Hood, in particular, apart from his love of sneaking into abandoned buildings with a camera, is well-liked and comes across as a thoroughly solid bloke.
And Smith? Marie asked, thinking about Ralph's mention of Aaron's parents' past troubles.
Clean too, Sarge. Not so much as had his collar felt.
Looks like he might have played truant from school a few times, but I spoke to one of his teachers and it seems he was just adventurous. Even back then he was always off exploring.
He was a bit of a daredevil, apparently.
The teacher said that on numerous occasions he had to get him out of the attic spaces and off the roof.
Max gave a chuckle.
I reckon the teacher was fond of Aaron. He said there was no malice in him. He was just, as the teacher said, a venturesome spirit.
Which doesn't tally with what Fenchester wants us to believe.
Marie told them about the dressing down Ralph got when he was heard asking about Aaron and the Randleby airfield.
Curiouser and curiouser, murmured Gary. This case is weird, isn't it?
You could say that, grumbled Marie.
She looked at Robbie.
So, what's today's action plan, after the interview, that is?
I want to talk to Stella about this latest victim, Grant Leach, and pay another visit to Will and Lisa Sheringham. Apart from that, I'm going to ask Max to do some covert computer searches on Randleby and get Gary to go out and have a quiet word with the farmers who work the adjacent land. I want that place's story, but I don't want the world to know that we are wandering onto Fenchester's patch.
He looked anxiously at Gary.
Can you make it a very casual inquiry? Maybe I'll start in the local pub, get chatting and see if there's any gossip going round about the missing boy.
I'll buy a few drinks and hopefully find a few people to talk to. Leave it with me.
Some people have all the luck, Sarge, said Max. Days in a hotel on a cushy course, then he comes back and his first job's in a pub.
You're not doing too badly either, are Max, said Marie. Who sat behind a desk in a nice warm office while I was crawling under wire fences and creeping around a stinky old cinema yesterday, eh?
Ah, if you put it like that.
Max drew a finger across his lips.
Sensible lad.
She pointed to the clock.
9 o'clock. Shall we go downstairs and see if your urban explorer has arrived, Robbie?
He drained his cup